This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. NIPSCO is reminding its customers that even though the state's moratorium on disconnecting electric and natural gas service for the winter months is over, there are still plenty of ways to be able to pay the bills. Let's find out more from NIPSCO spokesperson Joshana Nash. And thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you so much, Chris. Chris, I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, this is a very important topic. Everybody wants to be able to take care of their bills when they are due. Some people have problems, and there are lots and lots of ways that NIPSCO has already set up within its own structure, aside from the state moratorium that is always on in the fall that continues on until March 15th, in this case this year. Let's start in and let's talk about the programs that are available to help customers who may have fallen behind on their payments or if they need some help in being able to catch up with them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you mentioned, with the moratorium lifting on March 15th, there are several opportunities and assistance programs as well as payment assistance that we invite our customers to review and look into to determine if they are eligible for it. There are programs related to LIHEAP, enrollment with that through May 14th for eligible customers. There's our CARES program, the NIPSCO Hardship Program, Township Trustee. We always invite customers to make sure to contact their Township Trustee to ensure that there may be some assistance there. And then we do have our payment agreements that I'm happy to kind of go through to talk about what's available for those that might need some additional help with spreading their payments out over a longer period of time.
Okay. Let's first begin with some of the ones that I know that are very popular and often used, it's called the LIHEAP, if I'm pronouncing it right, the LIHEAP mm-hmm. program, as it's spelled out. What's that program all about, and how can NIPSCO customers take advantage of it?
Absolutely. So LIHEAP, which is Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, it is available to households falling within 150% of federal poverty guidelines. And so with this program, customers who may be eligible within that, falling within that percentage, can contact either 211 or can go online at eap.ihcva.in.gov. Mm-hmm. And they can determine if they're eligible and apply. They can submit an application for heating assistance. That application is being accepted through May 14th. And then if they are eligible, they'll receive assistance with their heating.
I understand, too, that in that particular program, that during the summer months, if it's difficult to catch up on bills when the air conditioners are running so much, that if there's funds available, that program is applicable, too.
That is correct. And that program will begin in June 2021. Like you said, if funds are still remaining.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know one of the other programs that kind of goes along with that program is what's called the NIPSCO Hardship Program. Will you explain that as how it fits in together as sort of a way that would help customers of NIPSCO if they need help?
Right. So for customers that are just outside of the federal poverty guideline for LIHEAP, the NIPSCO Hardship Program offers up to $400 in gas bill assistance to households between 151 and 250% of the federal poverty level. So these hardship funds are available through many of the same, community action agencies where LIHEAP funds are distributed. And that is the date for application or determine if you're available. It's a little bit longer than LIHEAP, whereas LIHEAP is May 14th. With this program, the hardship program, it's through May 31st, 2021, or until funds have been exhausted.
We're talking with the NIPSCO Communications Director, Manager, Joshana mm-hmm. Nash, about the programs that the utility has available in energy assistance for customers that may need them now. That's because, of course, the statewide moratorium for disconnections has ended already. Another of the programs that is on the NIPSCO list that's worth checking out if needed is what's called the Customer Assistance for Residential Energy or CARE Discount Program. Tell us more about that, please.
Yes. So in addition to the assistance available through LIHEAP, the NIPSCO CARE Discount Program is designed to provide further bill reductions to LIHEAP-eligible customers. So once you're enrolled in LIHEAP, customers are automatically enrolled in the CARES program or the CARE program. And then reductions can range anywhere between 11 to 26%, depending on the same criteria used by the state in determining the level of assistance needed for LIHEAP. So that program is available through May 31st, 2021, or again until funds have been exhausted. Mm-hmm.
Is that a very popular program? Does that get used many, many times by customers, unlike maybe the other two that are more limited to low-income residents?
Well, with this program, it's with LIHEAP, customers that are in LIHEAP are automatically enrolled in this. So I guess you can say it is somewhat popular because those LIHEAP customers are automatically enrolled in this program as well.
Oh.
So in a sense, it's kind of, I say, would go hand in hand with LIHEAP.
That's good to hear. You mentioned at the outset of our conversation here about the fact that township trustees can offer up some energy assistance funds too. Will you explain a little bit more about that? Now, obviously, that probably varies from township trustee's office to township trustee's office, right? It's not always completely equal among every township here in the area?
Absolutely correct. So with the township trustee, we encourage customers to contact their trustee office to determine what assistance funds may be available. There may be some available. They can talk to them and see, you know, of course, explain their situation. And there may be some help for them. So with that, we're just encouraging customers to contact their local township trustee, see what might be available, explain their situation, and hopefully there will be some assistance available for them that way.
Does it seem that, like, the larger townships, just mentioned two just that come to mind immediately, North Township, which includes the city of Hammond, and Calumet Township, which includes Gary and areas around Gary, are they ones that seem to have more money available that they can use and make available to people that need the help?
I would assume so. I would assume that, you know, of course, again, I would say, you know, those individuals in those particular areas would want to call and just see what might be available. But, you know, I assume that there could be some more assistance available in some of the bigger townships. But again, I can't fully speak to that. I would just say that I would encourage customers to use that as another option to contact their trustee to see if there are some funds that are available or some assistance available.
I know that NIPSCO has, in fact, I've taken advantage of it myself, the flexible payment plan that's set up through the utility. Can you talk a little bit more about the payment agreement that can be arranged with that plan and some plans that are very similar to it?
Absolutely. So we have with our payment agreement, typically we've offered just 3-month payment plan agreements where you can spread your payments out over, over a longer period of time, over 3 months. However, with the pandemic last year, we were able to extend that to 3 or 6 month flexible payment plan arrangement where customers could kind of spread their payments out over either 3 months or 6 months. But for LIHEAP customers, those customers that qualify can actually enroll in the 12-month payment plan agreement where they would be able to spread their payments out over that 12-month period. So that is available. And for, I would say, for customers looking to get information about the 3 or 6 months, they can go online to NIPSCO.com/payment plans. And then for LIHEAP customers, I would encourage them to contact our customer care center at 1-800-464-7726 or 1-800-4-NIPSCO.
Now, we only have about a minute left here, and can you tell us a little bit here about some of the energy efficiency programs that, in turn, could also lower an energy bill if they take advantage of that?
Absolutely. So I would also, with our energy efficiency, I would say right now there are several things that you can do energy efficiency-wise in your home to make sure, with spring coming, to make sure that you're taking advantage of energy efficiency, making sure you get AC tune-up on your air conditioner. You can use solar lighting outside, also making sure you upgrade your appliances and things of that sort. Also, we do have several rebate programs that customers can take advantage of. They can go online to NIPSCO.com/save to learn more about that. So it's NIPSCO.com/SAVE to learn more about the energy efficiency programs, rebates, as well as tips available to them.
Well, Shoshana, thank you very much for spending time with us to go over all these great programs people should take advantage of if they need the help to be able to continue their service, whether it's natural gas or electricity or both. And we will hope that we'll have a chance to talk back with you again about this soon.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you. This is NIPSCO Communications Manager Shoshana Nash, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Coming from the State House, probably besides the two-year state budget, which will come out soon from the General Assembly, the most important bill that is being considered and has been passed and on its way to be signed into law by Governor Holcomb is a measure that will direct law enforcement officers to help de-escalate whenever possible instead of use of force. It's a very important police reforms measure, and one of the major sponsors of the measure is with us, State Senator Eddie Melton from Gary. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us first your feelings about House Enrolled Act 1006, which made it through the Senate as well as the House now and is on its way to the governor.
I appreciate it. This is truly historic in nature when we look at the historic issues that many communities have felt when it comes down to community and police relations, in particular in black and brown communities throughout the entire nation. As we've seen this past summer, we've seen multiple communities air their concerns around police brutality after the death of Mr. George Floyd as well as Breonna Taylor. So myself and our Indiana Black Legislative Caucus members, we met with thousands of Hoosiers across the entire state to listen, to get your thoughts and feedback on these issues as it relates to police reform holistically. And we also met with law enforcement professionals that felt the same way, that they want their profession to be recognized as individuals that's trying to do and protect Hoosiers across the entire state. So we worked with Representative Sturwall in the House, and he was able to author legislation that we worked very closely with him on, and the Indiana Sheriff's Association as well. We were able to provide the feedback from the public and from our constituents, the Black Caucus members, in regards to some of the things we want to see changed. Mm-hmm. So just to give you an example, this bill would require the Indiana Law Enforcement Training Board to establish mandatory training in de-escalation. And that's a huge step forward when it comes down to addressing use of force and things that we've seen throughout history. It requires de-escalation training to be provided as part of a basic training, in-service training, and executive training program. That just further shows the effort to make this happen. Mm-hmm. House Bill 1006 also establishes procedures to allow the Indiana Law Enforcement Board to decertify an officer who has committed misconduct. It also defines the use of a chokehold. That was something that was extremely important to the Black Caucus members as we wanted to communicate the fears and concerns of our constituents and our community, as we've seen George Floyd lose his life when he yelled out he could not breathe. So these are some of the measures that we address as is defined what the chokehold is. It's defined definitely as a use of force. It means applying pressure to the throat or neck of another person in a manner intended to obstruct the airway or passage, that this is a maneuver that should not be used in just any type of regular stop. It's definitely a use of deadly force, and we defined that. And that was something that was not defined in state statute in the state of Indiana. It specifies that an officer who turns off their body camera with the intent to conceal a criminal act commits a Class A misdemeanor, and that goes to speaking to transparency and accountability. And lastly, I just mentioned a couple things. It requires law enforcement agencies to request a potential hiree's employment record and certain other information from their previous employer, if that was another employment agency of law enforcement. So this bill is promoting transparency and accountability, something that we heard loud and clear from our constituents. And as we look into the state budget, it's also going to help appropriate $70 million to the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy to make repairs to their facility, to make sure that training is effective and is provided to all officers across the entire state.
Do you think, too, with this measure becoming law, it may broaden and certainly enforce some of the accountability measures that individual police departments, sheriff's departments, and even maybe even to appoint the state police to be able to continue on? Maybe it makes it more possible, I suppose, to make sure that every single department in the state, regardless of whether it's town, city, or the state police, follow through on these.
Yeah. There are a lot of great departments doing some good work, and this bill will help provide more uniformity across the entire law enforcement profession in the state of Indiana, and that's what we're looking to do. We want to thank all of those law enforcement officers that are doing the right thing, that have moved and operated in a very honorable way in their profession, and we want to identify those that may not have a history of misconduct or bias that many communities of color have experienced over the years. So I think this bill is a step towards addressing these issues. And I want to be very clear. I don't think this is the ultimate answer. I believe that this is a first step in the right direction.
Do you think that with the passage of this bill, of the bill, and actually becoming law, that over time, maybe hopefully sooner rather than later, that this will be an example for other states to take a very serious look out if they hadn't considered such similar measures on their own particular state? But they look at this and maybe they'll model their accountability after Indiana's?
No, absolutely. I think Indiana is always known as a leader in various policy areas. And I think this is kind of setting a template for some other states to look at. And what I want to make sure that the listening audience know that this passed unanimously in both chambers and through all committees. This is a nonpartisan piece of legislation that Republicans and Democrats and independents were able to rally around, because we identified this as an issue. We listened to our constituents and people within the law enforcement profession to figure out how we address a very, very real problem.
Well, Senator Melton, thank you for taking time out and during the session to talk about this measure that has completely gone through the General Assembly and is now headed to Governor Eric Holcomb's desk for signature on serious police reforms across Indiana. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. And I just want to encourage folks to stay very closely connected to what the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus is doing. We have much more legislation that we're going to be pushing, such as the ban of no-knock warrants and so many other things, but this is just the beginning. But thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That's State Senator Eddie Melton from Gary. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Reporters Roundtable Thursday. And to find out some of the latest of what's happening in the State House, we've already heard some already, but we'll find out more in particular. We have Caitlin Lang, who is one of the team of State House reporters for the Indianapolis Star. And she's with us today. Caitlin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
We have asked a couple stories that you have your byline on, talk in particular about one of the measures that lawmakers are considering. And the first one is up. It was a discussion and some drama, too. But first, let's talk about the bill itself. It's House Bill 1198, and it deals with sex crimes in the past that minors may have committed and would they be allowed to be charged, I guess, as adults. Will you fill us in, first off, about what the bill's all about?
So that is House Bill 1198, and basically it's trying to fix this gap in the law right now where if a teenager commits an act of child molestation, once they turn 21, they can't be charged anymore for that crime that they committed as a teenager. So lawmakers are trying to fill that gap, and the solution that they've settled on for now is allowing those people who are now adults to be charged as adults for acts when they were committed as teenagers. So this could be, more than a decade down the road that these people could be charged for the crimes they committed when they were teenagers.
What are some of the changes that the bill entails that they would like to see enacted into law?
The main thing is just allowing for these people to be charged for child molestation because, like I said, right now they can't be at all once they hit age 21. So, and the way the bill works is once the victim reaches 31 years old, the statute of limitations is up anyways. So basically someone could be charged until the victim is 31. And obviously this is controversial because it's the debate of should someone be charged as an adult for something they did decades ago.
Yeah. I understand this came about because of a decision from the Indiana Supreme Court a few years ago.
Right. There was a couple of cases that were going through the courts that the two individuals had turned 21, but they couldn't be charged for child molestation because there was nothing in Indiana code to let that happen. So basically, the Supreme Court, in their opinion, wrote that lawmakers needed to figure this out, and that's why we're here this year working on it.
Well, we've heard here now about the bill itself and what some of the provisions are in the bill that's making its way through the General Assembly. And the other story that you wrote, Caitlin, goes into a little different in detail. It talks more, I guess, about drama than the dry polemics that come about when lawmakers debate the bills, take a look at the bills, and then they, of course, end up going up for a vote, yay or nay. And in particular, the story that you wrote has the headline, Indiana State Senator Raises Concern with Child Molestation Charging Bill. Was it personal? Will you tell us what this story is all about and tell us, I guess, some of the drama that can happen during committee meetings on some bills that maybe are important, maybe controversial in some cases, but there's a bit more drama behind it all than what we think. Will you go into that for us?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you never know what's going to happen during these committee hearings, but this one particularly stood out to me. Basically, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor started sharing something that, you know, some other lawmakers thought was personal. They, you know, they asked him to stop sharing basically right when he started. And he, basically what he had said was, you know, I don't know if I should say this. I'm going to say it. When I was younger, we used to have this game where, you know, hide and go seek, right?
Yeah.
He continued on then to say, some of us need to admit that we did some dumb stuff as kids. The point is we did something stupid. We might have grabbed a girl inappropriately as a kid. So, you know, the question was he talking about a personal experience? And of course, I had asked Greg Taylor about this, and he said these are all hypotheticals, that he wasn't talking about a specific incident. But of course, it raised eyebrows during the committee hearing enough that other lawmakers and people testifying were telling him to stop talking.
Did it seem that it really got, I don't want to say testy, but certainly got contentious, I suppose, in the committee meeting, in large part because so many of our state lawmakers are actually attorneys. They've gone to law school. They're in law practice, no doubt. That's, of course, since they're part-time lawmakers, they have a regular job outside of being in the General Assembly, and usually that's practicing law. And do you think that maybe it was just a case that because Senator Taylor wanted to talk a little bit about real life situations that maybe might be on the edge of being something that might skirt the law a bit, that maybe they were a bit concerned about even bringing it up?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people testifying too were lawmakers as well. So you have a room full of, you know, at least I know of at least five lawyers that were in the room, but I'm sure there were more. And one of the lawyers even joked, you know, more or less, thanks for consulting your lawyer before talking to us about it. So he took it as this being a personal story. But I think it goes back to, we don't often see a lawmaker talk like this during committee. So I think it threw a lot of people off.
Is it a situation that because, like I said, of course, we should mention, and I should mention, and it says so in the Indianapolis Star story, that Senator Taylor is a lawyer, and there are obviously lots of other senators that were in the committee meeting, one of which is from Northwest Indiana. We're talking about State Senator Karen Talion from Ogden Dunes, who's also a Democrat, just as Taylor is. And I guess there are very serious concerns about whether we're crossing not only political party lines, but we're talking about concern about some legal lines too, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and I think what's interesting is it certainly wasn't just Greg Taylor who was concerned about this bill. You know, Senator Karen Talion was as well. You had mentioned that she's a lawmaker up there. But obviously he was the only one who went where he did in his testimony. But she, in fact, was one of the ones who looked like she was urging him to stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
One of the folks testifying even said, "Senator Talian is concerned about what you're about to expose." So, yeah, I think other lawmakers were concerned at the time, like, what is he going to say? Should he be saying this in the middle of a committee hearing? And then also what I think is really interesting about the situation is whether Greg Taylor was talking hypotheticals or not, he was up front asking, could I be charged in this situation for this crime if this bill went through? So I thought that was interesting that he did make it personal. And then at the end, he also said, you know, if you're in your 30s, I'd be very scared right now in Indiana. Uh-huh. And he said, this is scary for me, is the exact words he had used.
Well, we probably should mention this bill did get out of committee, and it is coming up for further consideration in the General Assembly. So it's not over yet, and we'll just have to wait and see if the measure makes it into law, to be sure later on before the session ends. Caitlin Lang is one of the State House reporters for the Indianapolis Star, and she wrote interesting stories that you can check out in the newspaper about this latest drama from the General Assembly. Thank you for spending time with us to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and this week. I'm Chris Nolte, and thank you to all of our guests who have been on the program today, and to you for listening, and we'll be back with you on Monday.